Mr. Punch presents The Sporting Gazette, a gallop through British sporting history in two parts. Compiled by Sue Rodwell and directed by John Tuckey. Part 1. Sport.
Samuel Pepys, January the 4th, 1663. To the tennis court, and there saw the king play at tennis and others. But to see how the king's play was extolled without any cause at all was a loathsome sight. Though sometimes, indeed, he did play very well and deserved to be commended, but such open flattery is beastly. Afterwards, to St. James's Park, seeing people play at pell-mell, where it pleased me mightily to hear a gallant lately come from France swear at one of his companions for suffering his man, a spruce blade, to be so saucy as to strike a ball while his master was playing on the mall.
Alan Clark, Friday the 11th of January, 1991. Reading through Classic Car, I saw a photograph of Jack Fairman. I suppose he must be about 70 now, but he looked at death's door. He was the first of what we now call the Muse whom I ever met when I went over to Hawley, while still at Eton and risking the sack, to look at the cars in Speedster's garage. Fairman was clipped and authoritative, with a black moustache and experience, he implied, of war in the desert. Fairman was not in the dealing line, but I do remember him on several occasions in the 50s and 60s as an indifferent competitive driver with a curiously inflated reputation. Did he ever win a race? Even I have won a race, after all. But he was a player on the scene, memorable for the defiant "I spun the car" quote during the Nürburgring, one of the most epic I ever witnessed. Anyway, there he is now, gaunt and old, and further on, pictures of Fangio, now 80, crashing a Mercedes W Grand Prix car on a demonstration lap in Australia. It's age, I fear. Pure age. When is going to be the first time I do it?
A.A. Milne, to the Times, 20th January, 1933. Sir, now that it is officially announced that the bitter feeling already aroused by the colour of Mr. Jardine's cap has been so intensified by the direction of Mr. Larwood's bowling as to impair friendly relations between England and Australia, it is necessary that this new leg theory, as it is called, should be considered not only without heat, but also, if possible, with whatever of a sense of humour test matches can leave to a cricketer. It seems funny, then, to one who did not serve his apprenticeship as a writer by playing for Australia, that a few years ago we were all agreed that cricket was being killed by mammoth scores and marathon matches, and that as soon as a means is devised of keeping scores down to a reasonable size, cricket is killed again. It seems comic to such a one that after years of outcry against overprepared wickets, a scream of horror should go up when a bowler proves that even such a wicket has no tellers for him. It is definitely the laugh of the year that season after season, batsmen should break the hearts of bowlers by protecting their wickets with their persons, and that when at last the bowler accepts the challenge and bowls at their persons, the outraged batsman and ex-batsman should shriek in chorus that he is not playing cricket.